Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Rogers Communications Q2 2017 Results Analyst Teleconference. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today on Thursday, July 20th, 2017, at 8:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I'll now turn the conference over to Ms. Amy Schwalm with the Rogers Communications management team. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm here with our President and Chief Executive Officer, Joe Natale, and our Chief Financial Officer, Tony Staffieri. Today's discussion will include estimates and other forward-looking information from which our actual results could differ. Please review the cautionary language in today's earnings report and in our 2016 annual report regarding the various factors, assumptions, and risks that could cause our actual results to differ. With that, let me turn it over to Joe to begin.
Thank you, Amy, and good morning, everyone. It is a pleasure to speak with all of you again today. Before Tony and I discuss our Q2 results, I will share some high-level insights and thoughts on our priority areas of focus. First and foremost, I'm incredibly impressed by the passion and engagement of our team. There's an energy across the organization underpinned by both commitment and innovation that is truly unique to Rogers. As I look across the business, I see a great mix of assets. As the largest wireless provider and the largest cable operator in the country, I see meaningful growth potential in both businesses. In media, we have the rights to the most coveted and meaningful content Canadians want to watch with live sports. Collectively, these tremendous assets provide a strong foundation for growth. On the customer experience front, I'm encouraged by the progress we have made on churn, and I believe we can do even better. I believe there's a fundamental need to fix systematically and holistically our customers' experience end-to-end. This has not been a core focus for us in the past, and it is now. Overall, there will not be a radical shift in our strategy. Think of it as an evolution, not a revolution, or a thoughtful progression from where we are today. Strategically, we're focusing on our core businesses and investing for sustainable growth and shareholder returns. Here are some initial thoughts on our key areas of focus. First, the customer experience. I put this at the top of the list because it all starts and ends with our customers. We want to create a best-in-class experience for our customers. We will do this by putting our customers first in everything we do, driving deeper end-to-end accountability for service and loyalty. Fundamentally, this means offering innovative, compelling products and services that our customers view as clear, simple, and fair. The benefits of greater customer loyalty are immense. Lower churn as a result and improved cost structure, more opportunities to invest, and fundamentally better growth prospects. Second, we will invest in our networks to support the ever-growing need of our customers for bandwidth, performance, and reliability. Networks are the lifeblood of our business, and world-class performance is critical. Next is innovation and delivering exciting solutions and content to our customers. This is not innovation for innovation's sake. It's about delivering innovation to our customers that they value and makes their lives easier. Our investment here will be twofold: to focus on bringing our customers the best products and services by leveraging ideas from across the globe, and to focus on delivering stronger returns for our shareholders. Next, we want to drive growth in all the markets we serve. This will require a relentless focus on the critical growth drivers in our main lines of business. It will require a company-wide focus on cost efficiency to drive profitable and sustainable growth. We are reviewing all aspects of our business and developing a playbook to reset our cost structure. We've exercised some near-term opportunities, and you've seen this in our results this morning. Cost efficiency will be a natural outcome of a better customer experience as we drive out complexity, eliminate unnecessary customer activity, and friction. In short, we are committed to delivering an ever-improving experience for our customers while we continue to focus on enhancing the fundamentals. And that is revenue growth to drive higher margins, profit, free cash flow, and return on investment, as these are the key drivers of shareholder value. Now, turning to the quarter, We're very pleased with our strong operating and financial results and our continued momentum overall. Looking at some of the highlights, we reported strong service revenue and AOP growth of 5%, largely driven by accelerated momentum in wireless, where we have delivered across the board. Cable AOP and margins grew meaningfully, and our residential internet business showed ongoing strength. During the quarter, we acquired an AWS One Spectrum license in the Greater Toronto Area at an attractive valuation. We expect to deploy this spectrum in the near term to increase capacity for our customers in what is a key market. We recently simplified our organizational structure for deeper end-to-end accountability. We also made some changes to our management team and elevated the importance of digital with the appointment of its chief digital officer. We're moving fast here so we can lead the industry in driving better customer experience and reducing operating costs. Turning to wireless, we delivered another quarter of impressive results. Postpaid ARPA was up 7% and blended ARPU grew 3%. Ongoing adoption of our Share Everything plans drove this growth and represented a higher percentage of our overall mix. These plans resonate well with our customers because they can bundle in various features and manage data across usage across multiple devices. Postpaid net additions of 93,000 were up 28,000 on our lowest churn rate in 8 years. Postpaid churn improved 9 basis points to 1.05 with substantially lower churn rates on our Share Everything plans. As I mentioned, we are extremely focused on ensuring end-to-end accountability for the customer experience, which will ultimately contribute to churn improvement over time. In cable, total service unit net losses increased and internet net additions were down slightly given a highly competitive environment with aggressive offers. Notably, cable churn improved year on year for the fourth quarter in a row, and we saw lower churn across all products. On internet, our speed advantage is tracking well, with about half of our residential internet customers now on speeds of 100 megabits per second or higher. On the TV side, we are building a best-in-class next-gen suite of residential services with the X1 platform. The platform continues to evolve, integrating more choice for our customers through natural language voice search and a user interface that is not easily replicated. And we're seeing its success play out very well south of the border. The X1 innovation goes beyond TV to the digital home, providing customers with a simple, fast, and intuitive way to control and manage their connected devices. Overall, we are excited about the long-term outlook for our cable business. In media, we delivered revenue growth of 4%, which was driven by sports. Sportsnet continues its reign as Canada's number one sports media brand, as well as the number one specialty channel. As I said earlier, live sports programming is the content our customers want most. At the same time, we continue to make inroads in digital media. Following our strategic shift from print to digital last year, there's more work to do in this area. We'll start to ramp our efforts. Before I turn it over to Tony, I'd like to thank all 26,000 Rogers team members for their hard work in serving our customers and delivering a terrific quarter. I'm grateful for their commitment and dedication. I'm also excited about our future and confident we're well positioned to deliver more value to our customers and shareholders. Tony, over to you.
Thanks, Joe. We're very pleased with our financial performance this quarter. Top-line growth is coming in nicely with strong flow-through to adjusted operating profit and margins as we further improve our execution and operating leverage. As Joe said earlier, the entire company is focused on capturing cost efficiencies. Some are more near-term than others, but we see opportunities in both wireless and cable to improve margins from where we exited last year. You saw some of this come through in our Q2 results. Quarter to quarter, there may be some lumpiness with the timing of spend and seasonality, but overall, we are looking to positively change our cost structure. Turning to wireless, service revenue growth of 8% reflected a healthy combination of both subscriber growth and meaningful ARPA and ARPU growth. Additionally, roaming again this quarter contributed to positive revenue and ARPU growth and is no longer weighing on our reported growth metrics. So continued momentum in service revenue growth again this quarter with very healthy flow-through of 57% to adjusted operating profit, which was up 9% and marked our best growth rate since 2010. Wireless margins expanded 70 basis points on stronger operating leverage, notwithstanding our significant customer investments. Turning to cable, cable AOP and margins were up substantially on stable revenue year on year. Internet revenue increased 7% in the second quarter. Excluding the impact of the lower wholesale revenue from the CRTC's decision to reduce rates, cable and internet revenue would have increased 1% and 10% respectively. Cable AOP increased 3% and margins were up 150 basis points. Excluding the impact of lower wholesale revenue, AOP would have increased 6% this quarter. Higher AOP and margins were primarily driven by cost efficiencies and the ongoing product mix shift to higher margin internet services. Internet revenue comprised 46% of total cable this quarter. We look forward to more positive trending in cable as this segment returns to growth and momentum improves further on the popularity of our Ignite internet offerings and a compelling X1 product roadmap. In our media business, revenue grew in all of our segments, excluding the impact of the publishing restructuring. Sports led the growth, driven by the Toronto Blue Jays and the strength of Sportsnet, with higher NHL advertising revenue. AOP declined year-on-year, largely due to higher player salaries at the Blue Jays, combined with a higher foreign exchange rate. In addition, our shift from print to digital late last year is expected to impact overall media results year-on-year in 2017 as we ramp up the new digital business. I'll now go through some additional details on our financial results. Higher AOP helped generate operating cash flow of $823 million, which supported dividend payments of $247 million this quarter. AOP growth and lower CapEx drove free cash flow of $626 million, up 26% year-on-year. CapEx was lower due to timing of spend as well as proceeds from certain real estate sales in the quarter. Overall CapEx intensity came in at 12.6%. Cable CapEx intensity is expected to decline post our launch of X1, while we expect annual wireless CapEx intensity to increase more in line with industry norms. Of course, there could be some variability in any one quarter depending on the timing of spend for different projects. Moving to overall performance below the operating line, adjusted net income was up 20%, primarily due to higher AOP and lower depreciation and amortization. Net income increased 35%, which included a gain on the real estate asset sales. With respect to our financial flexibility, we ended the second quarter with a debt leverage ratio of 3.0 compared to 3.1 a year ago. We held the ratio stable sequentially despite our spectrum license acquisition. We expect ongoing AOP and free cash flow growth to fund debt repayments and generate further improvement in the ratio. Our balance sheet remains healthy with our solid investment-grade credit ratings with stable outlooks and attractive rates on our outstanding debt. To close, we're on track to achieve our 2017 guidance. We're determined to build on our momentum and drive further growth in fundamentals. And there are a number of compelling opportunities for us as we focus on cost and productivity improvements while continuing to deliver a better customer experience, for our customers. So with that, I'll ask the operator to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now conduct a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they're received. Please ensure you lift the handset for using speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. We'll now take the first question from the line of Vince Valentini with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much, and congratulations on the strong quarter. Joe, can you flesh out a little bit more your expectations on improving the customer experience and getting churn down? I mean, churn obviously has already done very well, down to 1.05. Are you confident you can get down sustainably below 1%, and is that sort of realistically a 2018 goal, or does it take longer than that to achieve?
Sure, thanks, Vince.
Well, first of all, the focus on customer experience and loyalty is one that requires the whole organization to play. I think to date we've focused very well on what we call the lower-hanging fruits. We've gone after things like bill shock and created some very important elements like overage alerts and data management. We've gone after different parts of individual channels with respect to customer contact. The focus that I'm really pushing on the organization is to look end-to-end across all of our channels, across all of our product sets. You know, all too often the people that are serving the customer every day are dealing with things that have gone wrong in marketing and sales and promotions and the product feature set, et cetera. And without that end-to-end focus, we're not really getting at the systemic issues that are really driving the problems as a whole. There's a lot to do on the end-to-end side of things. It's not sort of one single thing to point at. Fundamentally, it's about driving the right culture where everyone in the organization sees the role that they play in that customer experience. Whether they see the customer every day or not, they know what they do serves those needs. For example, if I'm a product manager, I'm as worried about the product feature set as I am about how the feature set is deployed through our channels, is supported by our agents, and the experience in the field. And driving that thinking in a more holistic and systematic way is at the heart of it. That takes time. That's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it's fundamentally important. I think there's a great opportunity on that front, and we're going to continue to push hard on it. And we'll go after how we measure outcomes across the business. We'll go after how we're structured for success, having the right people in the right roles, looking at fundamental processes across the business. And I believe we can drive the churn rate below 1%. It will just take some time to really do it in a fundamental way that's sustainable.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vince.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Aravinda Galapathige with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Morning. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to touch on the CapEx profile. Obviously, there's some timing-related lower spend on the wireless side, and I know, Tony, you mentioned that cable CapEx would sort of come off after X1. How should we think about, holistically, consolidated CapEx intensity on a go-forward basis, beyond 17? Maybe just help us with the thinking there. Thank you.
Sure. Why don't I start, Tony, and then you can pick it up. I think, first of all, it's important that we continue to invest in the right capability, capacity, coverage, and performance. It's important that we have vibrant, capable networks and infrastructure, and we future-proof ourselves for all that's coming. I mean, the appetite for data is doubling every 16 to 18 months across both our cable and wireless businesses. And wireless, what you'll see is that our CapEx intensity will resemble more the CapEx intensity of our peers, so closer to the 12 to 14% range. On the cable front, right now we're in the middle of an investment cycle as we bring the X1 product to market. Team's doing a good job of enabling our entire footprint on cable with DOCSIS 3.1 capability, and we have one gigabit capability across the board. We will see some of that moderate over time once we get through this investment cycle, this investment phase, recognizing that, as we sign up more customers at higher speed tiers and drive greater service levels throughout our cable footprint, it's more of a success-based capital profile than anything else. Tony, you can add to that.
And I would add that, as you look to the current year, the capital intensity you see in the first half is really reflective of the timing that Joe referred to. So as you think about CapEx for 2017, we provided a guidance range of $2,250 to $2,350, and you expect us to land sort of in the middle and maybe even towards the higher end of that range. And so what you see in the first half is really, as I said, just timing. I don't want to get into providing guidance for 2018 to be getting ahead of ourselves, Just to pick up on what Joe described, capital intensity in wireless, it's really what you see in terms of the lower intensity now is timing. And on the cable side, we talked about directionally as we move to the excellent platform, and we have a lot of the heavy lifting behind us, there's that upfront investment that goes away for us. And additionally, as that product moves very quickly to a self-install model, there are significant opportunities to reduce what we call, you know, the acquisition and overall cost structure for each customer. CPE will come down, installation costs will come down, and we go from, you know, as we said before, a cost structure today that's over $1,000 per customer to something that's probably less than $400. And you'll see that come through, and some of that will be offset with more investment in our networks in terms of segmentation. But as I said, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves on beyond 2017. Thank you.
Thanks. And just if I may squeeze a quick one in on the cable results, you know, you've had great subscriber gains in the last few quarters. A little bit of a slowdown in Q2. I was wondering if you just wanted to touch on that. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll start, Aravind. I would say what you see in the second quarter, keep in mind we typically have a higher level of disconnects as college and university students leave for the year. And so you see, against that backdrop, that's suppressing some of the numbers. I should add, early in the quarter, we looked at shifting some of our emphasis away from single broadband acquisitions to multi-product, both double and triple play acquisitions. And so as we made some of that shift, what you saw is a bit of a slowing down in the single. But as we look to our trending as the quarter progressed, and certainly into the early weeks of Q3, we continue to see good trending on our subscriber metrics.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Jeff Fan with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, and congrats on the quarter. Given the excellent results in the first half, you didn't change your guidance range for the full year, which would imply a bit of a slowdown in the second half on AOP growth. I'm wondering if you can just elaborate on that a little bit, your thinking around what investors should be thinking about for the second half.
Sure, Jeff. We see continued momentum for the second half, but there's a lot of work to be done in the second half still. There's, you know, question marks around whether we're going to see, you know, iPhone launches and what kind of iPhone launches overall. You know, there's seasonality that's very important in our business. We will do, you know, as much as two-thirds of our volume or activity in the last half of the year. So I think it's prudent for us to really keep our powder dry on that until we make it through the next quarter and really kind of see how all these different factors evolve, and then we'll come back to you. But we don't see anything sort of, you know, ominous or different on the horizon that we're concerned about. We're just being prudent and conservative in our approach.
Would you characterize that as more of a cost and side rather than the revenue picture being being impacted in the second half?
If I wouldn't, you know, if we think about both sides of it, cost clearly within our control. And as Joe said, develop and execute on our cost playbook. We're confident in the savings that we've projected for the second half, and those are more within our control. You know, the tougher part is the competitive intensity that happens in, as Joe said, the more significant part of the fiscal year for our business in both wireless and cable. And so we want to make sure that we're prepared for whatever happens in the marketplace. And then, obviously, handset subsidies is a big part of the cost structure, and that's going to depend on the launch of that product roadmap. So we'll need to see what that looks like from the various, you know, whether it's Apple or others, and the impact that that's going to have.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Drew McReynolds with RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good morning. Continuing on just the margin discussion, just two questions. First, Tony, on the cable side, I think last quarter you alluded to targeting flat cable margins year over year for this year. I'm just wondering, given kind of the progress you've made, certainly in this quarter, whether that's a little conservative. And as you get into next year with X1, I think you've kind of commented on that being margin neutral. Just wondering if that's still the case. And then just on the wireless side, just could you comment on just further kind of declines year over year in the upgrade cycle with your existing subscriber base? We're obviously seeing that south of the border and with your peers as well. Just wondering if you can add some additional granularity on, you know, what's driving that lower upgrade cycle, whether it's just pending an iPhone launch or whether there's other dynamics underneath the hood. Thank you.
Thanks, Drew. On the cable margin question, we've talked about last quarter that we see opportunities for cost efficiencies there. And as I said in the opening remarks, we're helped by the natural margin expansions with that happens with the migration towards internet. What we have said is we expect that the opportunity to expand margins in cable is about 100 basis points from where we exited last year. And so what you see in the first half of this year is some of that coming through. I think there may be an opportunity to see some of that in 2017. But as we get into 2018, there is, particularly in the cable side, the launch of X1, and there'll be, as you would expect, costs associated with that. And so in the early days, that may have an impact. And so prudent perhaps, but our thinking is that, you know, over the two-year period, 17 and 18, we continue to think it's reasonable to expect margins to expand by roughly 100 basis points. In terms of wireless hubs, as you said, within the quarter, there's a bit of a slowdown. It's traditionally a slower. They are down year on year. And frankly, I think that's largely reflective of the promotional activity and some of the expectations that surround, you know, potential new devices coming out this fall and the customer's propensity to wait for that. In terms of the percentage of the base that upped in the quarter, for Q2, it was 4.9%, down about eight or nine points year on year. So relatively small in terms of decline, but it's really, as I said, indicative of market factors more than anything else.
I'd just add to that as well, Drew, that, you know, on a macro basis, handset life cycles are getting longer and there's more useful life in handsets in total, largely because we're not seeing as many sort of iconic evolutions of capabilities and features. And as a result, there's a secondary market that is vibrant around handsets, and people are, you know, hand-me-down phones to kids in the family, which supports our share everything and add-on capability. So it's there's more of an ability to kind of like get a longer return on that investment and subsidy for us as well.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Jeff Fan with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I just had a quick follow-up. There's been some confusion, I guess, regarding pricing in the market, especially regarding installment plans. I just wanted to get your thoughts again on whether you expect there be some type of equipment installment type pricing in Canada, and maybe just your thinking around that.
Great. Jeff, I'm glad you asked the question. Frankly, we're disappointed to see some of the coverage recently on this topic. To be absolutely clear, we have no interest in getting into the equipment financing business. We believe we have all the pieces for a vibrant and successful smartphone market. You look at the subsidy model that's been created that works at all levels from the entry point to the premium plus category. We're seeing great growth in the wireless sector as a whole, and with that strong share from us as well. The premium plus category we created actually helps in a sense, you know, handset adoption as a whole, handset balances on the bill, kind of help people understand when they can upgrade. We just finished talking about the HUPs and the handset upgrades a minute ago. We have a very friendly approach to that. So I think we've created a vibrant smartphone upgrade market. We don't see any real need for company financing at this stage of the game.
Thanks, Joe.
We'll now take our next question from the line of David McFadgen with Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. A couple of questions. So first of all, you talked about efficiency savings throughout the organization. Do you have a target, or is there any thing you can share with us in terms of the actual magnitude you expect to realize in, let's say, the next 12 to 24 months? And then the second question, just on X1, can you give us an update on timing as to when you expect that to come to market?
Sure.
Why don't I start on the first one? Yeah. David, in terms of the cost structure and expectations, you know, our commentary on this is consistent with what you heard last quarter. I just talked about, without getting into the specifics of where the costs will be, just very generally, they'll play themselves out in terms of margin expansion in cable of 100 basis points by the end of 2018. As we look to wireless, we see further margin expansion of, you know, upwards of 150 basis points over the 24-month period. And so I don't want to get into too many specifics of, you know, specific areas or line items. But that generally, that's how we think it'll play out in terms of margin and ultimately cash flow improvement for those two segments.
On the X1 question, just a bit of context first, David. First of all, I think we all understand it's a very proven product. There's been strong success with Comcast, with Cox, and therefore we're following the path that they have blazed. And we're on plan. We're targeting a soft launch for early next year. Right now, we're going through a process of methodically going from lab trial to tech trial to employee trial to a soft launch and then a full launch. It's important we do this well. It's important that we have not just a high-quality product, but a very customer-friendly set of processes in how we market, sell, support, fulfill, and deliver on the experience. For us, this is a game changer. So we're going to watch it very carefully. We've had the normal sets of hiccups you might imagine, any sort of platform launch of this nature. But we're driving hard for a soft launch early next year. And we will then, when we believe we're in a good hardened state at some point later next year, then we'll double down and go loud and proud on the overall launch, which is the moment we're all driving for.
So do you expect to have X1 deployed across, you know, your entire footprint by the end of 2018?
No, not across the entire footprint. The goal is to roll through it. And first of all, we want to make sure that we set a place in the market where we're not overwhelmed by the demand out of the gate, and we can find the opportunity to kind of step into other parts of our segment base. And then we'll methodically go through each sort of value band in our customer base and look at a transition from current platform to the X1 platform. It'll take a number of years before we fully replace the entire base. Now, there are some benefits to be had in you know, decommissioning the QAMs, analog, and digital kind of capability that we have across the board and going to full IP. No question, we're focused on that. But at the same time, we are not intent on disrupting our entire customer base. We're going to do so in an economical and friendly way through the fullness of time.
Okay. And then just you commented earlier that, you know, it's reasonable to expect that when you launch X1, there will be some impact to the margin just because of marketing costs and payments to Comcast. Can you give us any idea on the magnitude of that?
It's not something that we're prepared to disclose in terms of just what we're going to spend to market the product. I think that's really highly sensitive information. I think the real prize is the outcome that we're after. If you look closely at what Comcast has generated over the last 8 quarters in terms of positive video ads and enhanced momentum in the internet base, followed by ARPU lift substantially, given the benefit in features and capability with our legacy product. I think that's the real prize, and we'll spend accordingly and prudently to make sure everyone knows about this great product that we're launching.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Simon Flannery with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks very much. Yeah, just continuing on the video, on the trajectory there, the penetration of homes passed dropped to about 41.5% this quarter versus 44.3% a year ago. What are you seeing in the marketplace? Is this really something that can be reversed completely with X1, or are you seeing more millennials and others doing the cord cutting and really taking broadband as a standalone product? Any color around your ability to stabilize that with X1, or are there other structural factors underneath it? Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Simon. A couple of things, Steve. I should clarify the penetration rates you described relate to the video product only. And so if we were to look at across our product set, you know, there's a natural, as you would expect, a natural migration from video to internet as we think about our total household ARPA. And so if you look at penetration rates just in terms of number of households that are connecting to Rogers, that penetration rate continues to improve for us, and we're pleased with the way that's trending overall. In terms of video specifically, that's why we're moving to the X1 platform. It's really about that experience that Joe just mentioned that we think is going to be a compelling value proposition. I think there's a number of areas in the marketplace. OTT is one of them, and while we see some of that happening in the marketplace, I'd be careful not to overstate what you're seeing there. There's a lot of compelling local content and sports, just to name a few, that continue to have value for linear. And we think something like the X1 user interface, for example, is going to be key to making that happen.
I just add, you know, on the cable internet side, we have a great product today. We have a leading capability, four times the footprint with respect to our DOCSIS 3.1 enabled 1 gig service. And internet growth that you saw in the results of, you know, 7%, and we'll continue to push hard on that front. So we're well poised with internet broadband in the very immediate term as we go forward. As we add the X1 video solution to come, and Tony talked about some great feature sets. One feature set I think that's going to play very well with our customers is the fact that Netflix is integrated inside of X1 directly. And, you know, to me, the battle is for the HDMI one source button on your remote control. And with Netflix integrated inside the Rogers experience, as you search through voice activation, natural language voice for a movie or a TV title, it will bring up all sources of that title, whether it, you know, comes from Rogers On Demand or whether it comes from Netflix or comes from YouTube or other sources. So we're kind of really democratizing the search and acquisition of content for our customers, and we think that's customer-friendly. It's clear, it's simple, and fair, going back to my statements earlier. And, you know, the 1-2 punch of a great internet capability with the X1 offering is going to be a game changer for us.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Philip Wang with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning. First question on the ARPU side, your ARPU growth accelerated this quarter. You know, there's still a bit of a gap between your blended ARPU versus your peers. I know that that's partly due to the mix, but I was wondering, Joe, if that is currently a focus for you to close that gap, or are you, or do you measure sort of the success based on other metrics like ARPA and also returns and such being more prominent than, say, ARPU?
Sure. Thanks, Phil, for the question. First of all, you're right. There is a structural mix gap that is not insignificant between prepaid and postpaid. That's roughly worth a few dollars of difference between ourselves and our peers overall. But as it relates to sort of true apples-to-apples comparison, we're going to work hard to try to close that gap. We've met with the team now a number of times to look at different ARPU enhancement ideas. It's really hard to act directly in ARPU because you really are, there's a market pricing dynamic that goes on that you can't always predict, in fact, rarely predict, and you're also trying to manage the re-rate potential of some of those moves and changes that, come along. But to have a discipline around ideas that drive value and drive ARPU is something that's very important to me and very important to Tony and I, and we're going to push on that front. In terms of whether it's ARPU or ARPA, it's frankly both. We get insightful information from both. It's not just a race to win subscribers. More than ever, it's a race to win households. And when we look at the households overall that we have on our Share Everything plans, there's very attractive relative ARPUs in those households and very attractive relative churn in those households. So we're going to fire on both fronts to make sure that we're acquiring subscribers, but also going after households. And going back to the previous comments as it relates to Internet and X1, I think we have a very compelling quad play in the works as we go forward. Add to that some of the work that's coming down the road with respect to the digital home capabilities of the X1 platform, our smart home monitoring business, and it all starts to kind of coalesce together into a household and family offering that we think will help the wireless business and help all aspects of our business.
Well, that's very helpful. If I could follow up with a question on some of the assets that you guys hold, which some of us may view as perhaps less core to the business. I'm talking about, say, the Cogeco shares, as well as, some of the on the media side, the Blue Jays and MLSE. Whether you've been there for 13 weeks, and you've certainly, I'm sure, looked at all the different assets in there. I was wondering if there are any strategic alternatives that you might sort of consider for some of these assets. Are you happy with the returns that, say, the media side is generating for you, and what are some of the alternatives that you might be thinking through?
Sure. To start, I would say right now we're happy with the mix of assets that we have across the business. I think it's a very rich and important set of assets, as I described way in the beginning. I will say that, we're perpetually unhappy with our results in any part of our business, so that's sort of the state of mind. And I'm not trying to be trite of saying we're forever driving a greater focus on results with the customer and results in terms of shareholder value as a whole. In the fullness of time, we'll continue to look at some of our holdings, and if there are better ways of servicing value, we'll certainly consider them. There's sort of nothing that we won't look at holistically in a facts and data-based approach.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Richard Cho with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Two quick follow-ups. One, on the customer service improvement, is this being done under the umbrella of that margin improvement, or should we see some kind of cost come in help facilitate that?
I have a deep rooted belief that improving customer service goes hand in hand with driving cost performance. The two are not mutually exclusive. The two are not opposing. They're actually completely synergistic. And that's the way to look at it. I'll give you one example. We as a company take about 47 million phone calls per year. Average phone call for rough numbers costs about $10. Some of those phone calls, a good chunk of those phone calls are important phone calls to our customer relationship and to ongoing sort of service and support of our customers. But a lot of those phone calls are also calls because of challenges we've had along the end-to-end customer experience. As we drive out improvements in the customer experience, we will drive up call volumes, and that's a huge amount of money. You do the math on the overall basis, it's tremendous. And that by definition will continue to drive margin improvement as we have driven margin improvement this past quarter. And you know, there are other areas that we're looking at. We spend upwards of $5 billion a year in procurement, a combination of OPEX and CAPEX. And Tony and I are going to go through every category of spend and really look for ways to improve value, to consolidate the vendor base, to drive a better per unit cost efficiency. And again, that will contribute to the COGS line and to margins as a whole. So the cost efficiency is a direct outcome of customer service improvement, not a detracting factor.
And then in terms of the Share Everything plans, can you give us a sense on where we are in the adoption curve? Is there a lot more to go and we can see our group continue to go higher, or are we kind of in the middle or tail end of that?
Richard, I would say, you know, when you think about the Share Everything, it's still still a ways to go on it. You know, it's only been a few years. If you look at customers coming in, I would say that, you know, roughly two-thirds of them are coming in on Share Everything in terms of the Rogers brand. And so there's still, that gives you a sense of the opportunity for to continue to improve that. We see considerable value in the Share Everything. When we look at the metrics around Share Everything in terms of churn, ARPU, and ARPA, there's tremendous value there in terms of lifetime value. And so that's something that we still think has quite a bit of runway for us.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Vince Valentini with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Can I talk about the one area that was not great in your numbers, being the AOP in media? So is it the vast majority of the decline Blue Jays salaries? And if so, can you give us any context? Is there some timing issue here of when the salaries get paid and timing on the FX rate? Because obviously the dollar has gone the other direction here in the past few weeks. Should we see some relief on those costs, or is this sort of structural for the whole year?
Vince, thanks for the question. So a couple of things. In terms of the Jay salaries and seasonality, as you expect, they're kind of the salaries go in line with the season, so it sort of hits us Q2, Q3. And then depending on what happens in the playoff season, then that'll trickle into Q4. And so what you see is, you know, that coming through, certainly to the extent that there's any trades that happen before the trade deadline, that could have an impact on it. But our salary is our salary based on the roster we have today. And so that'll continue to come through. In reference to, you know, is that the only item? There are things that are up and down, but if we were to look at media overall, but for that salary increase, you would have otherwise seen positive media AOP growth. And then on the foreign exchange piece of it, you know, certainly we go through a hedging process, but over the last several years, notwithstanding hedging a year in advance, those hedge costs have come up. And so that's been, you know, an increase of over 10% year on year that we see there. So it really is those two factors alone that suppressed media AOP growth this quarter.
Great, thanks. And separately, enterprise and business telecom, you only had 1% revenue growth there. It's been an area where I hasten to say Rogers is not done as well as some of the U.S. cable companies in penetrating that market. Joe, you obviously have experience running business telecom operations in the past. Do you have any initial thoughts there about potential to accelerate that business? I know you've added Dean as the head of it, but if you can give us any more color on what you're going to do and when we might see some results, would be much appreciated.
Sure. Thanks, Vince. You hit the nail on the head. On one hand, the wireless side of the business we've done a good job of driving growth in wireless. We're going to spend more time driving better focus on value, not just growth in subscribers in the wireless side of enterprise. On the wireline side or the cable side of enterprise as a whole, we have a very small share. We have less than 5% share. And right now we're in the middle of a reset in that business. We're going to go back to basics, fewer but core products. We're going to rebuild the sales team as a whole. You know, we're very fortunate to have Dean coming on board. There's a good experienced team within Enterprise there in many parts of the organization. With Dean's leadership, we'll bring the whole thing together and really go after the fact that we have underutilized plant and facilities across both our cable and fiber networks that are running right by businesses all across Canada, and we just haven't really leveraged that synergy and that capability very well. So it's kind of a very simple back-to-basics, small and medium business-focused approach, leveraging our cable footprint with a combination of data, voice, video, internet services that are simple to sell and simple to buy. And I think, you know, that's important. And I think, you know, in the fullness of time, we can get to where our cable peers are on this front. I don't see any reason that would hold us back in the obstacle. As to how long it will take, you know, let's kind of come back to that question maybe in a future call. It is right now we're just reassembling and rebuilding the capability as a whole. The other thing we have that's going to be important is, you know, as we build up capability along LTE Advanced and on the path to 5G, as we do some node splitting across our cable network, we have an opportunity to be much more synergistic in how those facilities can be orchestrated, designed, and installed in a way that we leverage the potential for our B2B business. And that's something that I think is very important. I'll be working very closely with the Enterprise team and the network team on making that happen. Stay tuned. We'll come back with more details in the near future.
We'll now take the next question from the line of John Hodulik with UBS. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. Thanks. Maybe just a couple quick follow-ups on the X1 rollout. Joe, thanks for providing the detail in terms of the X1 rollout. But are there any guideposts you guys can give us in terms of penetration of the base with the X1 service as we look out to sort of full availability? And then for Tony, I believe at one point you said the you're hoping to get the CPE per home to below $400. Just some clarification on that, if that was correct. And number two, where is it now? You know, I'm just trying to get a sense of sort of the capital efficiency we're looking at in terms of the conversion from QAM to an all IP sort of platform. Thanks.
Okay, right. So on the penetration side, it's a sensitive piece of information that we're not really going to get into sort of what is the penetration we're after the time we have penetration. I mean, it's highly sensitive for us competitively, so we'll let our results speak for themselves when we get out there. Tony?
And in terms of the CPE, John, you did hear me correctly. We're looking to move that to below 400 from something that's over $1,000 today. And so think about it in terms of, you know, in today's world, with set-top boxes that have hard drives within them, you know, you have an average per household of just over two of those. You include the modem, and then you have installation costs. And those are really the, you know, the three primary items that get you to, as I said, over the $1,000 today. And with the X1 platform, and a cloud-based offering, what you see is CPE for the set-top boxes coming way down. In addition, because it is IP-based, it offers much more alternatives in terms of CPE. Although having said that, we will follow the Comcast roadmap and benefit from that. Because it's IP-based, it lends itself very well to self-install. And so that's the other piece of it that you see coming out also. Thanks.
So that 400, that 400 number that you guys are quoting, is that includes labor as well?
It does.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have time for two additional questions today, the first of which will come from the line of Rob Goff with Echelon Wealth Partners. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good morning. My first question would be on the media side, where, Tony, you had said that there would be some pressure on the results while you ramp up on digital. To what extent would that be a reference to the need to build digital revenues, or does it also suggest that there are operating investments or made into that digital product?
I think it would be both, as you would expect. Certainly on the digital side, as we ramp that, we'll make investments in the product itself and the offering for that. And so what you see playing out is really the removal of print revenue and print costs. We continue to, as you see everywhere else in that space, be convinced that we made the right decision on it at the right time. And so as we go through, when you look at our year and your metrics on that, you'll see that coming through. And so as we exit the year and then are into 2018, I think you'll see a revenue and cost profile that that would make more sense.
Thank you. And if I could, as a follow-up, I think we're just past the one-year anniversary on the Unison products. Could you perhaps give us an update, a refresh on the traction you've seen in those?
Yeah, so good question. So in terms of, for those not familiar, it's Unison is a product that we launched on the enterprise side of our segment. It's an offering that gives businesses the opportunity to replace the business landline with something that is more integrated and much more functional with the wireless devices. And so since its launch, we've seen healthy acquisitions on it. In the functionality of the product, we continue to invest in. We see that coming along well. We're not going to disclose the specifics relating to the product, obviously, but it continues to be one of our core product offerings within the enterprise space, and we see a lot of upside potential for it still.
And our final question today will come from the line of Maher Yaghi with Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. So thanks for taking my question. Joe, I wanted to ask you a bigger picture question regarding your wireless network. Can you comment on what you've seen so far on the readiness of the network for the next upgrade cycle and if you need to increase your fiber footprint to service it better? I'm talking specifically on the next upgrade cycle and as well as your view on network sharing agreements in general, the strategy behind that, and if you need to increase work on that area in the future.
Sure. So in terms of our wireless network and readiness for the evolution of wireless, first of all, as it relates to 5G, let me start there. 5G is still early days. We really are waiting on the standards around 5G. We're waiting on equipment that is supportive of 5G and fundamental use cases that make sense for us in our Canadian market around 5G. So as that evolves and develops, then we can have a clearer view as to what needs to happen to network investment on the path to there. Right now, a lot of I would call press release trials going on in different parts of the industry and a lot of experimentation going on. Our job is to stay very close to the global players that are defining this ecosystem and really be a fast follower in their tracks from that perspective. On the road to on the road to 5G, there's a lot of work to do with respect to what I would call 4.5G, if you want to call it that. Really, it's LTE advanced. We continue to kind of make investments in carrier aggregation, make investments in 4x4 MIMO, and we're going to just keep driving on that path so that we get the fundamental benefit of that capability. With respect to fiber backhaul, teams have done a good job of building fiber backhaul to where it's necessary. We do have high-capacity microwave in a portion of our network as backhaul, but high-capacity microwave is really driving even greater and greater potential. We're seeing speeds up to 20 gig on that front overall. So we'll make those changes in backhaul methodically as we think they're appropriate. But right now we're not disadvantaged in any way, shape, or form as it relates to backhaul. Teams doing a good job of actually staying current on that front, but. Having said all that, data consumption, as I said earlier, is doubling every 16 to 18 months, and there's never been a greater appetite for data, mobile data. Canadians lead the world with respect to their appetite
for mobile data, certainly in the top ranks of countries. And we've developed an industry in Canada that is very much focused on investment in infrastructure. It's great to see that the government is supportive of an infrastructure investment approach in the industry. And we will continue to kind of drive forward on that front. As it relates to network sharing, we're very happy with the network sharing agreement we have in place with Videotron. We're open to other network sharing agreements that are out there, but we don't think that they're fundamental or critical to our success. We have another good agreement in place in Manitoba, but we'll be selective and thoughtful around doing that. Right now, we've got the capability to continue to have best-in-class performing networks, and we have the capex capacity to continue to invest in that future.
Thank you, Joanne. Good luck.
Thank you, Mike.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the Q&A session for today. Thank you for participating, and please disconnect your lines.